people were getting out of the service rapidly. This is in 45, late 45 and early 46. And so we were all then located at Lockbourne Air Base. And the future, as far as it looked, was, well, from now until the next war, all you're going to have is a little three-squadron unit there at Lockbourne for blacks and black enlisted and officer personnel. And nobody can get promoted until somebody dies off or something like this. And it was just a bloody mess. And it could be seen that this is ridiculous to be supporting the whole base just because they wanted to keep all the blacks in this thing. So that, plus a lot of other rumblings and ramblings and force, caused the effect of Truman saying, hey, let's knock this off, let's be economical, and they've proved that they can do things, let's put them up with everybody else and go like that.
So what finally happened after? So now the war is over. Now the war is over. You've had your own personal experiences now.
Well, Colonel Gleed became a career man. He stayed in the service.
Oh, you stayed in the service. So you're a professional Army man, you're a professional Air Force man.
Well, you can say that, yeah. 30 years total.
You are, what, now retired?
Right.
Yeah. But you were a serviceman.
Right. I got out in 1970.
Now, in your case?
I returned home from the war, and I taught flying at Tuskegee for about a year. And the situation was getting boiling down to an impossibility. And as Gleed said, you couldn't get promoted, and I couldn't see any future of me rising any higher than I was. And so I came home, and I came back to civilian life. Then when I got back here, I had some more brushes with discrimination. As a young man starting out in life, with a college degree in his hand and a teaching credential, I went back to get my job that had been promised me when I went in. Incidentally, when I went in, I had qualified as the teacher. And I'd actually gotten called for a job, but I was leaving for the service the next day, so I couldn't take the job. So when I came back out of the service, the law was that you had to give him back, a serviceman, back his job that he had before. But they took a technical twist on the fact that I didn't sign the contract, so therefore I had no job. Therefore, I'd have to take the exam again. So I went down and took the exam again. I passed it again without going back to school. And after I passed the exam, they still wouldn't let me have a job. Said, oh, you have to go back to school. There's some more courses you have to take. And by that time, I got sick of the runaround. So I decided, well, I'll become an airline pilot. So I had all of this pilot training behind me. And I went down to Long Beach Municipal Airport, where they were at an Army Reserve unit that was flying down there, P-51s, which I was proficient in. And I went down there to fly, and they told me they didn't have no niggers flying at this base. I'm sorry. Well, I was pretty bitter then, and being a good boy, I had saved my money, so I was married and had a little child, and had to think of something to do, and I went to buy a house in Beverlywood, advertised for sale for veterans, and I had the necessary qualifications and the necessary financing and everything, and they told me I couldn't buy it. And I didn't understand why I couldn't buy this house since I was a veteran. And so I started studying real estate and got in the real estate business. And I spent 30 years in the real estate business. And my principal reason for going into real estate was to find a good home for myself. And then after I got in the real estate business, I found that all of these different neighborhoods were restricted, as they said in those days. And I also found out that it was the real estate board that was doing the restricting. I had no problem with the people, the property owners. They were willing to sell if they wanted to, but it was the real estate board that kept the owners from selling, threatening them with the idea that the value of the houses would go down if blacks moved in. And that's a lot of the work that I did at that time, was finding neighborhoods and homes that blacks could buy. And that's where I made a living for 30 years.
That's amazing. And as you you're now a real estate man, I assume you come across younger couples, young black couples, middle class, who probably encounter the same things you did, and you do, I suppose, the best you can in breaking a neighborhood, breaking the restrictions, that is, of it.
Well, there hasn't been that big a problem in the last, I'd say, the last 20 years. There hasn't been as widespread.
Okay. Problem.
Not as widespread.
But it's been a fight all the way along. We have some monumental first, at least for this area. I sold the first person a house up in the Baldwin Hills,
mm-hmm.
Which was an interesting transaction. They paid them $10,000 more than they paid for the house not to move in.
Really?
That
might be my friend. That's incredible.
That's on the machine.
Oh, anyway, this is fantastic. We're near the end of it. This is I just want to get a couple of conclusions. So, your life, you became a real estate man so you could buy a house in an area you wanted to live in.
Right.
That's incredible. Did they ever give you a reason?
There was all types of reasons. Yeah. There's thousands of reasons. Like, and the main one is, I'm thinking of my neighbor. I don't want to sell to blacks because it might hurt my neighbors.
You know,
it's not me. I'm not prejudiced, but my neighbor would be insulted if I put some black family next to him.
So I'm thinking, you fought a war. You and Colonel Gleed were among heroes who protected bombing planes, and you fought a war against Hitler and against, as they say, racism. And here you came back. And this kind of way helps explain what you said at the very beginning when I asked you about feelings about World War II. So you feel World War II affected your... See, I'm coming back to that theme of my book. So it affected your life.
Tremendously. World War II... has a tremendous impact on black people as a whole. If you read history, there's been tremendous strides for black people after every war, because usually in the conduct of a war, the black people are readily accepted as equals. But then, after the war is over, they revert back to the bigotry. But this is not the great majority of white people. It's the small, vocal 15% that keep this thing going. For example, Colonel Gleed had to integrate a condominium project in Englewood to take him to court to allow him to buy a place to live.
Late in 1970. Right here in Los Angeles, Paul Inglewood.
So this has its ironies, of course, throughout here. You two guys, two heroes of a war, considered by some the only just war, because what followed left many things, questions to be unanswered, of course, Korea and Vietnam. And so, as I ask the last question before I... Anything else... Before I ask the last question, which is a resume, anything else that I've left out that hits you as I mentioned World War II?
Well, if you had another week,
yeah.
we could tell you some more. Just talking about things that we were directly involved in, and this is just two out of 996 pilots.
But there were 996.
Yes, we're just two, and we get it from a different different perspective. Yeah. Here's as a career man, and I as a civilian minute man that won the war for the country. Now I'm back home.
So remember at the very beginning, I asked you about World War II. You said negative feelings of bitterness, and so perhaps thoughts after this hour of conversation. Anything else you want to add to it?
Well, I could go into a lot of details of things. I think the wars that have happened subsequently have been toned down, especially the Vietnam conflict, which I think is a shame that they don't recognize or haven't recognized them as full-fledged veterans and give them all the veterans' benefits.